Welcome to ICTJ's podcast series.
We are talking with ICTJ's Vice President Paul Seals to discuss the amnesty law proposed by the government of Yemen as part of the transition deal with President Ali Abdullah Saleh. The law provides a blanket amnesty for Saleh and his aides for, quote, all acts committed before the law is issued, end of quote, effectively covering all 33 years of Saleh's rule, including the recent violence in which scores of civilian protesters were killed, tortured, and wounded. Mr. Seals, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
The proposed amnesty law in Yemen has drawn fierce criticism from the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Navi Pillay. In a statement issued last week, she says that some of the crimes for which the amnesty is being considered could amount to serious crimes that cannot be amnestied under international law. Can you tell us how the international legal instruments, including Rome Statute, impact the draft law being considered in Yemen?
Certainly. There are essentially a number of treaties in international law to which Yemen has acceded or ratified, which basically require Yemen to investigate and prosecute gross violations of human rights. Yemen has ratified the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which require an effective remedy for victims of serious violations of human rights, which would include criminal investigation in many cases. They have ratified the Convention Against Torture, which requires investigation and prosecution or else extradition of suspects for that to be done in countries who want to exercise jurisdiction. Although they haven't ratified the Rome Statute, they have signed it in 2000. They've ratified the Geneva Conventions, including Additional Protocol 2. What can be said with some certainty is that, for example, if Yemen was ever to find itself before the International Criminal Court, either as a result of a referral by the Security Council or as a result of a referral by an incoming government at some point in the future, the amnesty law which is proposed at this point would have no impact on the possibility of ICC investigations in relation to any suspects that were either Yemeni citizens or for crimes committed in Yemen. So in terms of the Rome Statute, it really has no impact should the ICC ever have jurisdiction, which of course they don't at the moment. And in terms of Yemen's own international obligations, the proposed amnesty law is manifestly and uncontroversially in breach of those obligations.
Human rights activists in Yemen and elsewhere have firmly rejected such a deal, saying this would amount to impunity for gross human rights violations committed by Saleh and his forces. What would be your comment to that?
I think what you're seeing with the proposed law is really a throwback to a very outdated and discredited attempt to deal with transitions. The idea that you can simply amnesty away the past, provide for official amnesia and guarantee impunity, riding roughshod over the rights of victims, riding roughshod over the needs to create any kind of trust between societies and their institutions, is really such an unacceptable proposal in the current state of international law and international relations that to allow it to stand would be a real affront to the progress of international law and human rights over the last 30 years.
On that note, talking about international sponsorship, if you want, of the transition deal in Yemen, which has now resulted in the proposed amnesty law, it's been brokered by the US, the EU, the UN. What would their endorsement for such a transitional agreement mean for the struggle against impunity, especially in the context of Arab Spring, where on one hand we have Mubarak on trial for very similar crimes, where we have a prospect of the ICC trial against Saif al-Islam Gaddafi and Abdullah al-Sanusi, and then a completely different set of criteria for Saleh?
Well, I think the implications would be clearly a sense of double standards of different classes of victims in different countries. I think this is exacerbated when you have the situation of the Arab Spring. It's not unusual for some countries to deal with things in a fairly robust way, if you like, in terms of transitional justice, and others to deal with them in a very poor way. But the trouble or the issue here is that with the Arab Spring, you have a number of relatively similar situations. And if one of them is seen to be requiring, at the hands of international community, for example, the ICC investigations in Libya, clearly requiring the prosecution of those most responsible for crimes committed, at least in terms of the referral to the ICC, and on the other hand, international endorsement of what appears to be blanket impunity, not only is that a very poor signal from the international community in terms of their commitment to the struggle against impunity and the rights of victims to justice, it also indicates a very negative view, of course, for the victims in Yemen themselves, in terms of obviously having those rights vindicated and making sure that the transition itself leads to more effective protection of human rights in the future.
Let's try to look at this from a different perspective. Is there a way to achieve both, have Yemen adhere to international law and principles of rejecting impunity while at the same time implementing some sort of amnesty to achieve a political settlement? Are there examples where this has worked?
It's important to recognize that international law does not preclude amnesties per se. And in fact, if you look at the additional protocol 2 to the Geneva Conventions, it's actually explicitly encouraged that states seriously consider providing amnesties to, for example, rebels in relation to alleged crimes of sedition or rebellion or treason. And the very purpose of that is to facilitate the process of reintegration after internal strife, so that the very objectives of national reconciliation can be achieved more quickly. So international law acknowledges and recognises that in certain circumstances there are ways in which an amnesty can be a fruitful way to achieve those objectives. The absolutely crucial qualifying aspect on that is that you cannot, under any circumstances, extend that objective to cover an amnesty for the core crimes, if you like, what are now regarded as the core international crimes of war crimes, genocide and crimes against humanity. The difficulty we have here is an amnesty that looks very much directed at protecting the former president and his immediate cohorts in relation to the very kinds of crimes which can't be dealt with that way. One other thing I would point out is that the proposed amnesties to cover all 33 years of the regime. Now, most people are focusing at this point on the violence in the context of the uprising in recent months itself, and of course that's an important aspect to it. But one also has to bear in mind 33 years of what effectively is a single-party state and single-party rule has led to repression in one form or another, which could also be categorised as violations of serious human rights for which amnesty should not be granted. So we're not just talking about keeping the door open in prosecutions for the violations of the recent months. We're talking about allowing victims the opportunity to look for justice in respect of any serious violations of human rights over the last 33 years.
Tell us, where do you think amnesty laws have been effective in societies facing a legacy of human rights abuse? We very often go back to the famed South African experience. Where has it worked, and how can it work, and what would be the long-term positive effects of amnesties?
I think the basic thing that has happened, if you go back, the South African amnesty law from the early 1990s really in many ways reflects the twilight of the age of impunity, if you like. That was really its dying days in terms of international law accepting it as an acceptable compromise in terms of these kinds of crimes. If you look at, for example, the UN Office of the High Commissioner's tool on amnesties, they talk about the South African experience, and they say that although it was lauded at the time as a interesting and potentially very important mechanism to bridge the period from apartheid rule to the post-apartheid regimes, most people now would look at it and say it was something of a false prospectus, that really what it promised it did not deliver, because the quid pro quo was that of those that didn't apply for the amnesty, they would be prosecuted if they had committed serious crimes. Over 7,000 people applied for those amnesties. Only about 700 people got those amnesties. You're looking at over 6,000 people who applied and didn't get an amnesty, of whom almost none have been prosecuted. So there's a sense of, as I say, a false prospectus about that side of things. And however important and interesting it was, I don't really think most people and most international lawyers at this point would say that's an acceptable way to go. And that's a really important point. Time has moved on. The sun has set on impunity. But I think that the other possible examples that are sometimes less remarked upon, where amnesty laws, despite being opposed at the time, have actually operated relatively well, would be, for example, the 1996 amnesty law in Guatemala at the end of the peace processes there, which interestingly did exclude amnesty in relation to certain international crimes, what they described as imprescriptible international crimes, genocide and forced disappearance. And what that has meant is that there has been very little attempt to investigate those who had committed crimes against the state in terms of the insurgency of the guerrilla in Guatemala in its 36-year civil war. That would be an example of an effective amnesty in respect of reintegration of offenders, of alleged offenders in terms of insurgencies. But by definition at this point, you can't have a positive example of amnesty for war crimes, genocide or crimes against humanity.
Mr. Seals, thank you very much for taking part in ICTJ's podcast.
Thank you.